listen to what Bill's got to share with us. Do you want to announce?
Good morning, everybody.
I was a bit worried when I was sitting down there before and you all sat down for the first two songs, and I thought, this is like our first holiday when we came to Tewkesbury was in 79, and we went up to Loch Carron, and the only church was a wee free church. And we'd never been to a wee free church before. And so it's like any normal church, because everybody fills in from the back. And then, I'm not saying anything about you at the back. they filled in from the back, and so we had to go to the front, and we as a family were sitting on the front row, so we couldn't see what was happening behind us. And so the minister came in, and everybody stands up for the minister, or we had to go by the noise. And we looked around and saw they were all standing up, so we stood up. Then they all sat down, so we sat down. Then they announced the hymn, and we stood up, and they sat down. And then they announced the opening prayer, and everybody stood up, and we sat down. And I thought, twinning's gone that way. No, but it's good to be with you this morning and to be able to share. And a couple of weeks ago, we were having a missions evening at the church, and about 5:30, I got a text message saying, we're both ill, so we can't be there tonight. And that was the speaker and his wife. So it was in my hands, and I was just going upstairs, and at the top of the stairs there's a book that Pam had put there, and it's really the title of the book is where I want to start today. Why are we sitting here until we die? And the amazing thing to me is that I find people who live their life wishing their life away. You know, people with young families and say, I can't wait for the kids to grow up. And I say to them, look, as they grow, so do their problems. As they grow, the issues grow. They change, but you have to face them. And other people who are saying, I can't wait to retire. Or I can't wait to just have nothing to do. Well, to understand this account here in 2 Kings 7, you have to know some of the background. The Syrians had come and attacked Samaria. They'd surrounded Samaria, and the people in Samaria were starving. And they got so badly off for food that the price of a donkey's head was exorbitant. And there's not much meat on a donkey's head. It's sort of one of those things that you boil, and they do it with pig's heads and you get brawn. But, you know, that's all you could do with it. And then chew on the bones. And I've seen people in situations like that. They would reduce to eating the droppings of doves. Now, you know, they were unclean to the Israelites. That was the state of things. And the king, decided that it was all Elisha's fault. So he'd said, we're going to chop his head off. We'll get rid of him. It's his fault. Isn't it amazing that whenever something goes wrong, we've got to have somebody to blame? We complain, we blame, and every time we blame somebody else, we excuse ourselves. Isn't that right? Complain, blame, and excuse. They're the patterns that we have. So Elisha was the problem as far as the king was concerned. And he sent one of his leading soldiers, and Elisha said, look, this time tomorrow, there'll be so much grain that it'll be worth less than a donkey's head. What you're paying for a donkey's head today will buy you sacks of wheat or barley. Inflation was going to be turned on its head. And this soldier said, if God opened the windows of heaven, it couldn't be. And Elisha said to him, you'll see it, but you won't enjoy it. And a bit like that sailor. He saw it, but he didn't enjoy it because he didn't look in the right place. And so that's the background to it. And then stuck in between are these four lepers. If they go into the city, they'll starve to death with everybody else. If they stay outside, they'll starve to death. Because nobody's going to throw any food over the wall to them. So they sort of look and they say, well, we may as well go down to the Syrians and see how we get on there. We can sit here till we die, or we can actually go into the camp of the enemy and see how we get on there. You know, I think there are a whole lot of people that I've met who are sitting waiting for something to happen. We don't want to go and do that. We don't really want to sit here and wait. So what are we going to do? And sometimes the easiest thing is to do nothing and wait for something to happen. And that would have been the easiest thing for these men. But they'd have died. So I want you to sort of picture them. They were cripples. Some of them, their fingers would have gone. Some of them, their feet would have been really in a bad way that they couldn't walk properly. They'd have to help each other. Can you just imagine these four fellows walking away from Samaria, going down the road towards the Syrians? They weren't able-bodied. They had restrictions. They had limitations. But they did what they could do. They went into the enemy camp. And you know, that's the one thing we as Christians are very fearful of doing. because something might happen to us. Their reasoning was, well, at the very worst, they can hasten what's going to happen anyway, and we'll die. So they got up and they went. And as they got closer to the camp, they could only hear the animals, the horses and the donkeys. It wasn't the noise of a military camp round about. There wasn't the activity. And they got there, and they couldn't see any people. So they went into the first tent, and they had a feast. They had a bonanza. They ate and ate and ate, and then they realized that there were goodies here that they could take and they could bury and they could hide and they'd be rich. And they went into another tent and they were doing the same. And then in verse 9 it says, we are not doing right this day. This day is a day of good news, and we remain silent. This day is a day of good news, and we remain silent. Isn't that a challenge to us as a church? We can talk to people about church. We can talk to people about the news. We can talk to people about the weather. But we very rarely talk to people about the good news. Sharing the life that's there. And they suddenly realized all this wealth was not just for them. They'd enjoyed it. But they went back to the city. They went back to share the good news. And I find this very challenging. Actually, this was the passage, and I didn't remember it until after I preached that particular night when the speaker couldn't turn up. The first message that I ever preached in, when was it? 1955. At a Boys Brigade Bible class. I don't think my application was quite as my application is today. But it's been a challenge to me. As I began to think about it that evening at home, I realized that in May I'll be 76, but that's quite young yet. And I look at it and I think, People keep saying to me, when are you going to retire, Bill? I said, that's what I do with the car when it's coming up for an MOT. I take it to the tire place first and make sure it's okay and retire it. But, you know, looking at it, I don't want to just sit round and fill in time, but to be constructive. Now, some of us, these lepers, could have said, it's a long way down to the enemy camp. I'm not going to be able to make it. But what they realized was that their future depended on them making that step, taking that step and moving towards the enemy camp. And they set out. They went forward. And they discovered something that they never anticipated at all. And that's the exciting thing about walking with God. Every time we take a step with the Lord, we actually are faced with something that is new. Something that is a challenge, but something that's an opportunity. Going forward with God. And then we have so much that we enjoy. We sang, "Give me oil in my lamp, keep me burning." And I think that was one of the first songs that I ever learned as a Christian. It was very popular in 1954. But, you know, so you're right up to date. But the truth is still there. And I was talking to one of my older sisters, the only one who's alive now. She's 90. And we used to go out in their car as a family. And I'd sing the songs, and this would be one of the songs, "Give Me Oil in My Lamp." My sister has very, very rarely been to church, but she knows the songs. And the amazing thing is, when they go out in the car, they think back and they sing those songs. I used to sing at my lathe at work. And even the Roman Catholic fellows, and Roman Catholic fellows in Liverpool didn't actually join in with anything Protestant. But they actually learned the songs. And they join in. And one of them came to know the Lord. And he became a pastor. But it wasn't because I preached to him. It was because I sang. And he came to me one day and he said, "Bill, you don't have to get drunk to be happy. What's the difference?" And I just said, "The difference is Jesus." Now, these lepers, they went down to the enemy camp. Dreadful place to go, really, isn't it? The last place you want to go. But listen, there's blessing out there. There's blessing in the enemy camp. Because that's where the people who need Jesus are. Now, they faced another enemy once they came to their senses. And they said, "What we're doing isn't right. We're enjoying all these goodies. We're hiding the stuff away. We're putting something away for a rainy day." But listen, the people up there are still starving. And we need to go and tell them. we need to go and share the good news with them. You know the greatest problem they had? Nobody would believe them. The king didn't believe them when he got the news. He said, it's not true. The Syrians are playing a trick on us. Pam, whenever she thinks of a lady across the road, and she'll say, I need to go and see Elizabeth. I say, go on then. And she said, well, she might be resting. No, she's not resting. Well, she might be doing her washing. She cooks this afternoon. And it's all the things that might be happening, but they're not necessarily happening. Aren't we all like that in some way? No, we're challenged to do something. The Holy Spirit lays something on our heart, someone on our hearts, and we think it's an inconvenient time. When really, in reality, what we should do is to get up and go. So these lepers, they got up and they went back to Samaria, and they gave the news. And the king allowed some of the soldiers to take 2 chariots and 5 horses and travel all the way from Samaria down to the River Jordan. And all they found along the way were discarded garments, discarded weapons, all the signs of a retreating army. Because God had sent a noise that frightened the Syrians. And they conjured something up in their minds. And they ran. So the soldiers came back. They told the king. And the people from the city ran down to the camp. And they got all that they needed. I believe that these are days when we're going to be facing some major issues as a church. Lots of challenges. But with every challenge, there'll be an opportunity. Saul, who became Paul, was a challenge to the church. And when he first got converted, the man who God chose to bless Paul didn't want to go and see him. And I believe God's going to call each one of us to touch different people. And it'll be a challenge. But it would be an amazing opportunity to see people turn round. I get a text message from a young man nearly every day. And he lived on the streets in Cheltenham. He was a drug addict. And then somebody befriended him. And he became a Christian. And then through a problem in the church, that caused all sorts of upheaval in a church in another town to us. His marriage broke up and he went away from the Lord. He was away from the Lord for 10 years. But one fellow who was a friend of his in church never let go. He'd go and play pool with him. He'd go around with him at different times in different places, and he kept contact. Till he got him back to church. And every day, because he knows of the situation with Pam, he knows the situation with Lloyd, every day he sends me a text message. Bill, how are you? Do you need any help? I'm here if you need me. And just the text message is such an encouragement. Because he knows what it is to be an outcast. But now he knows what it is to be received, to be accepted. He's accepted by the Lord. He's accepted in the church. And the greatest compliment he paid to me was, Bill, thank you for showing me what a husband should do and how a husband should be. Now, I didn't say anything. I didn't preach to him. I was just living. And I didn't know anybody was watching. Brothers and sisters, we're being watched. What does the old piece of poetry say? You're writing a gospel, a page a day, by the things that you do and the things that you say. Say, brother, sister, what's the gospel according to you? Four lepers. Four men whose lives were ruined by leprosy. But they believed they had a future. They didn't know how big that future would be, how long it would be. But there's only one place to go. And that was to the camp of the enemy. But when they were enjoying the blessing, they said, it's not right for us to keep it to ourselves. We need to go and tell somebody. I was blessed on Friday. I was in Tewkesbury High Street, and a lady that I've had contact with for many years, I used to know her and her husband as we'd meet in the town from time to time. And she said to me, I'm getting baptized soon. I did the Alpha course at Trinity. And I meet with a group of ladies who are all my age. And it's so good. But somebody made a friend of her and said, "Why don't you come to our Alpha course?" And surprise, surprise, she went. And she came to Jesus. She got blessed. The church is getting blessed. And she's a chatterbox. So a lot of other people will get blessed too. It's not good for us to keep the good news to ourselves when there are people who are hungry.